Hi everyone, welcome to the Bootstrap MBA. I'm Jacob Greenfeld, and in this show I document my journey towards an independent MBA-type education that is focused on building bootstrap businesses. Over the course of the next 12 months, I will try to learn everything I can about ideation, software development, and marketing. And I will apply what I've learned by launching a new product each month. Thanks for joining me. Welcome to another update from me. And the first thing I want to talk about is a project I launched last week. The launch was completely spontaneous, so it wasn't planned. It wasn't on my list of things I wanted to do. But I saw a tweet by a fellow maker, by Mubashir Iqbal, and he launched a product, I think, two weeks ago. And it was a super simple site which just aggregated the best links from Hacker News for each day. And then you have a simple interface with different days shown next to each other. And all the posts there are ranked by the number of votes. And if you're using Hacker News, then you probably know that the posts there are not sorted like that. They have some different algorithm. It depends on how long ago the post was posted and all kinds of different factors. And on his side, well, all the posts were just sorted by the number of votes. So you, in principle, if you just visited the site once a day, you immediately see all the top posts. Whereas when you just use Hacker News regularly, then you would have to visit it multiple times a day. Otherwise, you will be missing a few good posts because they get pushed to the bottom really quickly again, and fresh posts surfaced again. So because of their algorithm. And this launch inspired me to do something similar, and I called it Maker News. It's available at news.makerreads.com. And instead of just Hacker News, I included Product Hunt and Indie Hackers. And then I created a very, very simple site which shows the top posts from Indie Hackers, from Hacker News and Product Hunt just next to each other in a clean interface. And you can click on it and then you will get immediately to the corresponding posts or the website that is linked there. And this is just a very simple and clean and ad-free way to keep track of what is happening in the maker world. And I built it really in an afternoon and launched it quickly. And, well, it didn't get much attention on any platform. So neither on Indie Hackers, nor on Hacker News, nor on Product Hunt. But to be honest, I expected this kind of outcome, because Basha's project that I mentioned, I think it's called Hacker News Day, maybe got around, I think, 30 upwards or so on Product Hunt and not much attention elsewhere. He tweeted about it and got, like, I don't know, 10 likes or so, even though he has 10,000 followers. And so chances were high that my very similar project would get even less attention because I don't have as many followers. But yeah, it got a few more upvotes because, I don't know, maybe it's a little bit more useful because it's not just focusing on Hacker News, and this is why I built it. And yeah, the idea really was simple, and I'm still glad that I built it, even though it didn't get much attention, because I'm now using it myself. I find it very useful to stay on top of the maker world without having to check different sites all the time. I just visit now Maker News once a day, and I get a perfect overview of the most important stuff, and that's it. So I like the project myself, and maybe more importantly, I built the site because I wanted to learn a few things, and in particular, I wanted to learn how to work with APIs. And Hacker News and Product Hunt have very nice APIs you can use, and so this is why I was able to build the site so quickly. Only for Indie Hackers, it was a bit tricky because there's no Indie Hackers API, so it's a scraper that visits the site each hour and picks the top posts and posts them and saves them in order for them to be shown on the site. And there was just one technical challenge otherwise, really, and this is, I'm a big fan of static site hosting, so Netlify, Wurzel, these kinds of things because they are completely secure, they are fast, they need zero maintenance. And I tried to find a way how I can make this happen, the idea I had, the make and use idea with a static site. And it turned out to be trickier than I thought because my first idea was that I just use some cloud database because I have then my Python script that fetches data either from the APIs, from the Hacker News Product Hunt API, or scrapes them from indie hackers. And then this data, the script runs, let's say, every hour, and then the data gets saved in a cloud database, and my front end then always fetches the fresh data from the database, from the cloud database. But it turned out that it doesn't work that way. At least people are not doing this. And I had a look at different cloud databases like Hasura and MongoDB, but apparently they are not intended for this kind of use case. So I was really mistaken. I thought they were intended exactly for this static site hosted, getting dynamic data from a backend kind of thing. But yeah, it's not true. So later I then learned that apparently Firebase is able to do that. And I had a look at it and it seems to be working exactly for that kind of use case. But I learned about it too late. So I ended up using a different solution, which is maybe a bit silly, but also so simple that yeah, I think it still makes sense. And it's really, let's say, foolproof. And what I'm now doing is that I have the Python script, which fetches the data, is called using a cron job. And then the data is saved in JSON files. And after the script has run, I commit the data also using a cron job to GitHub. And the cool thing about Netlify and Wurzel is that as soon as they detect that there is a new that there is a GitHub update to a repository, they automatically rebuild the site. And so really all I have to do in order to keep my data on the Maker News site up to date is commit the data, commit the site to the GitHub repository. And this is easily possible using just cron jobs on my Ubuntu server. So really the solution now is cron job calls Python script saves JSON files get copied to my front end folder, the front end folder, which contains just the presentation of the site, then gets committed to GitHub, including the new data. And this is also done using a cron job. And then from there on, Wurzel is doing everything automatically. So it's rebuilding the site and showing it, including the new data. And so it's really super simple. And there was just one obstacle, and that is that you can't simply include JSON file data on websites. So another thing I learned, there are these kind of course issues which are intended to prevent cross-site scripting, or I don't know, it's a security concern. And therefore, browsers like Chrome do not allow that website front end just includes loads data from a JSON file. So I had to build a front end that's a lot more sophisticated than I intended to. So it's now not just an HTML file with a bit of CSS sprinkled in between, but instead I had to use Vue.js, and it's a framework I already used before for my Maker Read sites. But this time I had to really use it not just as a library, but as a build tool, because yeah, you can't just include JSON files. So now I have to use Vue.js really as how it is intended. So it's a fully fledged version of Vue.js, not just included as a library in a static HTML file. And this was a bit more complicated. So I had to learn about Vue.js, how to work with Vue.js, how this build process works, and the different folder structures in Vue.js. But it's actually quite simple, and I was able to do it. And now also the cool thing is that Wurzel is automatically able to do this build process, or runs automatically the build process once you have it configured every time there is a new there is a new update. There is a new update to the repository. So yeah, I learned a lot, and even though I did the project didn't get much attention, and I'm probably the only person who's really using it regularly now, I would count it as a success. So because I learned a lot. Now the next thing I wanted to talk about is that I started to take a deeper look at the kind of projects you can build, because when I started roughly 3 months ago, I had a really limited understanding of the things, the kind of things you can sell, because I probably mentioned in an earlier episode that I primarily want to focus on software products. And yeah, it turns out there's a lot of stuff you can do. And this classical examples of software as a service is just one example in a whole landscape of things you can do. And it's certainly not the easiest one, especially if you're a beginner. So because there are lots of things you have to learn if you're a beginner like me, right? For example, you have to, yeah, as I mentioned, how to launch a product. Yeah, how do you get some first attention for your product. And then there are all these different steps, like how do you sell a product? So how does it work as payment processors? What about refunds? And lots of different things. And then on top of all that, you get all the software kind of issues that you have when you are selling software as a service product. So I feel like when I did a little bit of research, I feel like now that a more gradual approach would be better. So what I mean is, let's take an example of an info product. So when you're selling an info product, you still have to learn about launching, about all these payment kind of issues, but all the issues that are related to software are removed. So you can really just learn about this one aspect or these one or two aspects and really focus on them and learn about them. And yeah, to me at least, it feels like entrepreneurship in easy mode. So, but I certainly, at least now, don't want to publish an info product because, well, I think I have nothing in that direction that I could sell, so I have no ideas. But there are also lots of similar types of products you can sell where you also don't have to deal with software-related issues, or at least that much, and where I can really focus on other issues I have to learn about first. And I think a lot of people are making the mistake. So if I'm reading posts on Indie Hacker, there are lots of people who spend like 6 months building their software, fixing all the bugs, only then to discover that they have no idea how to launch it. They do lots of mistakes on launch day, submit it at the wrong time, and are not able to drum up any attention. And then the payment processing fails, and well, all these kind of issues are preventable if you already have some kind of experience. But it's hard to get this kind of experience if you're just doing software products where you have to build them for quite some time. So I think, yeah, it will make a lot of sense for me to focus on simpler products where I can learn the ropes first, and then later move on to more complicated. So gradually moving towards more complicated solutions. And just to name another example, because I mentioned the info product, but you can also sell data products where you, for example, just collected an interesting data set, and then you can sell it to people, right? So it's another example of a product which is, at least in my opinion, simpler for a beginner to get some understanding of the mechanics of entrepreneurship compared to software as a service, where you have lots of issues to deal with and can't really focus on marketing, let's say. And yeah, even afterwards, so there are really lots of steps, and I really created a database of the kind of products you can create, and then you can sort them by how difficult they are to pull off, how much money you can potentially earn through it, how much effort, how much work it is, like all these kind of factors. And I will probably publish it in the next few weeks. I'm not sure in what form or what I exactly will do with it. Maybe it's just a thread on Twitter, maybe a blog post. I don't know. But I will definitely post this research I did. And there are really lots of simpler things than a software product, like, for example, also single-purpose apps where you just charge a small fee, like $5, for a specific task that your software is performing instead of some kind of huge software suit that is doing 50 things, like, let's say, maybe a bad example, but you're building a competitor to Photoshop, right? So you have this really software, a real software product. But also you can imagine that people would pay money, I don't know, for just a simple tool where you can upload your image and it comes back just looking nicer, which, for example, is then used by e-commerce stores where they get their product pictures in a better version of them back. And this is like a single purpose app, also much simpler. And I think at the back of the spectrum, we have physical products, which are, well, you not just have to deal with software issues probably in a modern age, but also with manufacturers and all kinds of things. I will talk more about these different types of products once I have the blog post or whatever published. But just a quick update that I really spent quite some time thinking about it and made the decision that I will not immediately try to build a software product and sell it, but instead I just want to get my feet wet. So because I started with really simple projects and no monetization, now I want to move on to my first products, which means I will include monetization in some form. I want to learn how if I'm able to make some money. And only once I feel like I have an understanding of that, I will move on to more complicated, more ambitious projects, if you want. So the third and last thing I want to talk about today is that I've decided to not just study subjects. So because when I started my Bootstrap MBA experiment, I decided that I wanted to focus on three topics, right? I wanted to focus on ideation, software development, and marketing. But I now think that it can also make a lot of sense for me to study people. So instead of focusing on a subject like marketing, I can pick a person which does a lot of things that I would like to do, who is in a position I would like to be in, and study not just what they are saying, not just their advice, but also explicitly look at what they are doing and learn a lot by doing this. And so I'm not really talking about mentoring, at least in the classical sense. So I really like this one essay by Derek Sivers, where he talks about his mentors. And the plot twist in the essay by him is that he never talks to some of his mentors, right? And I really like this idea of having mentors you never talk about. And this is how I started to think about it. And the first person I decided to study is Nathan Latka. He has a super popular podcast. He recently launched a new product which got a lot of attention, which is called Founder Pass, which is a way for founders to get cheap loans. And previously, he also he's still selling a data product, which is a database where all the numbers his interview partners in his podcast mention are included. So it's just, you don't have to listen to the podcast to get all the numbers. If you're just interested in the numbers that are discussed there, you can just pay a few bucks and get this database. And I really think that there is a lot I can learn from him. So he's really a few steps ahead of me, if you want. So I don't want to turn into this kind of media figure, which is certainly what he is doing. But still, there's a lot of things I feel he's doing right and that are worth emulating. I wrote a quite long blog post about him, which is titled Six Lessons I Learned from Nathan Latka. So if you're interested in more details, then you might want to take a look at it. It's available on my site, jacobgreenfeld.com. And maybe just one thing I want to mention here, which I personally find super impressive, and I've been thinking a lot about this, is how he's able to really leverage almost anything he does. So the perfect example is that he has just 2 days each month that are solely dedicated to podcast recording. So he records like 20 podcast episodes in a single day, and each episode is just 15 minutes, but still it's an insane schedule. Nevertheless, so that's all the recordings he does for his podcast, and he releases a new podcast episode each day. And he does this by just working 2 days a month, if you want. And of course, he has set up a whole system which includes lots of contractors, which then take the raw audio, video, and cut it and upload it and do transcripts and all these kinds of things. But still, for the pure work he personally is doing, it's just these 2 days. But it really doesn't stop there. So he has this 2 days each month, and it already is impressive that this is enough to produce like a new podcast episode for each day in a month, right? But he's really getting so much leverage out of it. So he's, for example, the database he's selling, I mentioned before, is purely fueled by this, by the podcast episode. So you can say that also this product he's selling is a result of these just 2 days of work, which is crazy because he has assistants, contractors, which extract the data, so he's not doing it himself. And once more, yeah, he's getting an insane amount of leverage out of it. And not even there it stops, because he has also a magazine, the Latke magazine it's called, and even the articles in there are transcripts or parts of the transcripts from its podcast episodes. So really, really crazy. It really got me thinking, because one thing he mentions is that there are lots of people who can produce great content, right? This is not the bottleneck. This is not the bottleneck if you want to get a large following, build distribution channels, whatever. Content is not the bottleneck, because there are so many people who can do it, but only a tiny percentage of them are able to do it, right? So what he mentions, the bottlenecks are systemizing it and marketing the content. So not content creation, but creating content systems and then doing proper marketing for them. These are the bottlenecks for him. And this certainly sounds true for me. And it reminded me of an observation in the book Start Small by Rob Walling, where he mentioned that there are like millions of people who are able to write code, and only a tiny, tiny percentage of them are successful entrepreneurs, right? So code obviously is not enough. It's not the bottleneck. Instead, you need to work on the right kind of ideas. You need to understand how to market it. And it's very simple, similar to the content game, to the distribution game, to the marketing game, where it's not just producing great stuff that's the bottleneck, but also systemizing it and marketing it. And I really started to think about it. And of course, what he has done is completely crazy. The system he built around his podcast and how much leverage he gets out of it. And I would be happy to get just a tiny, tiny percentage of that. So just... yeah, I'm currently not really good at it. If I'm looking at it, so the max I'm doing is maybe sharing a blog post of mine, so chopping it in pieces and then doing a thread on Twitter or so. So this is really the max for me. And I really need to start thinking more about how I can get more systematic in my marketing and content creation efforts, because currently it's still all quite some random, and if it's so random, it's hard to be consistent, and it always feels like hard work and is not as easy as it probably should be, and I'm still certainly not getting enough leverage out of the things I'm doing. So this is something I learned and want to improve upon, and when I find interesting ways to do this, I will certainly talk about it in later episodes. And this was just one of the cool things I learned by studying Nathan Ledger, but there are so many more. And just to give one more example, whenever he decides to launch something new, to start a new venture, he really looks at it as some kind of board game. Really, he just tries to find out what are the implicit and explicit rules that people are following, and then how can I break them in order to achieve my personal goals. And again, his podcast is like the perfect example, where, for example, he decided to call it the top podcast, the top entrepreneur podcast, simply because he discovered that lots of people were searching for this term, for this search term. And so he figured that this will give him lots of subscribers. But also he noticed that all the top podcasts were advertising with how many total downloads they got. So they would all write like 5 million total downloads, 1 million total downloads. And this is how they differentiated themselves from the bottom, from the rest. So if you have like a huge number of total downloads, then you will have a much easier time to get good sponsors and better podcast guests. So his idea how to hack this game is that he decided to make his podcast quite short. So each of his episodes is just like 15 minutes. And so it's much easier to get to like 1 million downloads if you produce 1,000 episodes, let's say. So because if you have 1,000 episodes, you just need 1,000 listeners per episode to get a total number of 1 million downloads. And of course, it's the way to get to 1,000 episodes is to make them shorter, because he wouldn't be able to produce 1,000 episodes if each was like 4 hours long. So he produces just short episodes and lots of them. And this is how he was able to get to 1 million total downloads in just a few months, which is really smart. And it's not something that I want to start doing, so I will do whatever length for my podcast that I like. But it's just a perfect example of how you can break the usual rules in order to achieve your goals. And there are really lots of further examples. So if you're interested in this kind of topic, have a look at the blog post that I mentioned. It's 6 lessons I learned from Nathan Ledger, available on my site. And that's basically all I wanted to talk about. I hopefully will launch this week my first product. So not project, my first attempt to earn some money. So if all is going well, I will be able to talk about the hopefully successful launch next week. And at least for me, a successful launch means that I will earn like $1, right? This is the goal I have. I would just want to get some understanding of how launching a paid product is different from launching a free product, and how I can work with, how money changes the equation. Hopefully I will have some good news to talk about next week. And another thing I'm looking forward to is that on Thursday, so today is Tuesday, in just 2 days, I will be having my first guest on this podcast, the Bootstrap MBA podcast. And so far, as you've mentioned as a listener, it's just me rambling into the void. And it's just me, it's like a diary for me. I'm talking about my progress, my goals, all these kind of things. But I also want to learn from more experienced people, so people I'm looking up to. And I think this is a great method to accelerate my learning. So not just reading books and lurking around, but also talking to the successful guys. And I'm really grateful that decided to come to the show, to join me on Thursday. We will be recording, and I'm sure he will teach me a lot. Because in case you don't know him, it's the guy I mentioned previously who launched Hacker News Day, but he's also like people call him the king of side projects. He has like 100 products launched on Product Hunt. He was Maker of the Year a few years ago, and he seems like a cool guy. So I've not talked much to him so far, just exchange DMs, and I'm really looking forward to it. And hopefully I will be able to turn this into some kind of regular thing where I'll be able to invite interesting people I want to learn from, because one of the cool things about a podcast is that it's a perfect excuse to learn from people, right? Because usually you're not just sitting down with some other person and it's question, answer, this kind of format. It's usually just chit chat, but in a podcast, this is more acceptable, right? To ask questions and dig a bit deeper. So let's see how the first try in that direction goes. Until then, bye-bye.